Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here. Today on the big program, lots to get to, lots to talk about. I'm going to start today off with Paul Begala. You know things are bad when Paul Begala is going after the Democrats. His quote just grabbed me. He said, quote, somehow in my lifetime, Democrats have gone from the party of the factory floor to the party of the factory lounge. And I'm going, you know, I'm checking the watch going, Paul, when did you wake up to that reality? When did that kind of get you? When you were advising candidates to kind of move the Clinton kind of way, the DLC new kind of, let's be a little more business friendly kind of way, tax cuts, that stuff. Just kind of wondering. Hey, glad you're here. Glad you've come around. Glad you're on board. Glad you finally figured it out. Now let's right the ship and get them moving in the right direction. And look, I think President Biden has been there. I think he is the guy who is right now the right guy in the right moment. And look, doing what he can on the inflation front. We've been talking about this the last couple of days. I think you need policy gonna move in the right direction, obviously, but you also need pressure on some of these big companies and incentives. Now, Wednesday, the president announced some things to help us boost domestic food production. Interestingly enough, I mean, we are the breadbasket of this half of the hemisphere. Why we don't already have these in place? Well, you know, you can blame our trade policies. You can blame mass consolidation, and I do. But you can also blame just corporate greed, because remember what happened to the small family farmers back in the 80s? And forward, do you remember what happened to the mid-sized farmers? Now we've got these massive corporate farms. And, well, there's part of me that looks at this policy and goes, okay, we're going to be giving money to these farms to double up on crops. We're doubling funding for domestic fertilizer production. You're going to give some technical assistance to farmers to help expand some things that can expand insurance for double cropping, putting two crops in the same field. We're going to do some of that. We're going to fight on those fronts because we have to. But, you know, if we had the number of small family farmers we used to have, if you had a larger section like we used to have, if you didn't have the mass consolidation, maybe we wouldn't be in this moment. But this is the hand that Biden was dealt, the hand the country's dealt, and the direction that we've got to deal in this moment. But there's part of me that just goes, you know, it hurts giving these huge multinational corporations any more resource just to do what needs to be done. I mean, this is what's frustrating about this, because these corporate criminals, and this is where it's so angering, the stuff that they get away with. Because I don't know if you saw the story today that the big boys in the meatpacking industry, of which there are a handful of companies that control the vast majority of meatpacking in this country. Evidently, during the pandemic, let's be generous and say they exaggerated claims that there was going to be a beef and pork shortage. Let's say that they exaggerated the reporting. The word they used was baseless claims. Let's say they just exaggerated a little bit so that they could pump prices up a little bit, pad the bottom line, and, oh, by the way, you know, run afoul of any coronavirus, mandates or any responsibility. Because, hey, you know, we've got to designate these workers as essential. We've got to demonize them if they say, hey, we should do something to protect us. And look, this was during the Trump years. So you can't go, oh, this is Biden's fault. No. This happened during the Trump years. They did this to Trump. So this isn't a partisan issue. The frame that we're fed as working people is always either right, left, Democrat, Republican. It's not right, left. It's not side to side. It's up and down. It's wealth class versus the rest of us. It's the CEO boardroom versus the rest of us, which is why I think the Bengala clip, the quote, is so important, and why Democrats had better take that seriously. Be the party of the factory floor again, not the factory lounge. You don't want to be the upper floor party. You want to be the people who are down on the ground floor getting your hands dirty. This is part of this. And when you see the fact that, you know, at least 269 people died working in these meatpacking plants because of these baseless claims, and nobody's going to jail for this. You know, they're not gonna hold it. There might be a slap on the wrist. Oh, don't do it again, bad boys. And they're mostly men, so don't. Oh, you're being sexist. No, most of the CEOs, especially in this industry, are mostly, if not exclusively, white men. But there's no accountability. There's no responsibility. Now, in the plants that were unionized, they had a much better chance. In fact, we had some representatives who represented workers in food processing plants across the country come on during the pandemic and say, look, this is what we did to protect our members. Got out ahead of it, you know, shut down early, did, you know, deep cleaning, re-engineered workspaces to separate people, you know, staggered shifts, different lunchroom, bigger lunchrooms, all kinds of things to protect workers in the moment so that the companies could continue to operate, continue to make money, continue to do their thing, but also keep the workers safe. Most of these places didn't. And the thing is you go back to the one who their supervisors were playing death pool games. You know, how many workers you think we can get sick today by putting them together? That's actually on the record. And this is one of those moments where you, again, it's not right, left. Get out of that frame of mind. This is top down. This is the moneyed interest. This is capital versus labor. That's the fight that's important. It's the moneyed interest. It's the institutional wealth versus everyone else. Now, I look at this situation that a number of states across this country, you can't find baby formula on the shelves. In the wealthiest country in the history of civilization, at its wealthiest moment, we can't seem to get baby formula to be put on the shelves. They said by the end of the month, last month, 40% of the stores were out of baby formula. Six states with more than half of the products out of stock were Iowa, Missouri, North Dakota, South Dakota, Texas, and Tennessee. One woman they cited from Louisiana went to 11 different stores and could only find two cans of baby formula. You go, again, remember, party of family values. Remember, we love the children. Remember all of those things. Now, Republicans have been using this like Marjorie Three Names, saying, well, we're going to give money to Ukraine, but, you know, doesn't have a bill to actually increase production, doesn't have a bill to go after and hold companies accountable, doesn't have a bill to do any of this stuff, just complains, which you expect from our Republican friends because they do it so well. They're so good at it. They're good at the PR. They're good at the tweets. They're good at the social media. They're good at complaining. They're good whiners. They're good at grievance. Solving problems, whole nother ball of wax. Now, the president, he got the companies together and basically said, hey, you know, what are we doing here? How about we start ramping this stuff up? Now, they have announced a series of regulatory moves for baby formula to get them into the stores as quickly as possible. And they're also pushing the Federal Trade Commission to crack down. I think a big part of this, again, I guess it's just because I'm jaded, because I view our corporate titans as greedy and opportunistic. They see this moment as a chance. Hey, supply and demand. If there's no supply, we can jack up the price because there's always going to be the demand. Because we're not going to be able to, in our society at this moment, we're not going to be able to do what needs to be done. And that is to give families the ability to have parents who can stay home, to take care of their children, give them the opportunity to not have to use formula. There are ways. There are ways of the past. There are magical ways. And women know what those are. But again, you can't do that if you're working 2-3 jobs just to make ends meet. You can't do that if the kids are in daycare. You can't do that. You can't. And this is where policy, again, where is my party of family values? Where are my pro-life folks who love the children? Where are they with the, hey, you know, let's get mom a chance to stay home for 2 years to make sure that, you know, we don't need formula. Yeah, what do we do about that? Do you remember the hue and cry? Oh, gee, I can remember it. What was his name? The guy who died, the big mouth. Limbaugh. That's his name, Limbaugh. You remember him when the ACA had the audacity. And you may remember, come with me on this journey in the way, way back machine. Because this happened. In the ACA, they said that there had to be a way to ensure that breastfeeding mothers had a space that they could pump while their children weren't at work with them. They could continue to produce breast milk. They had to have a place to store it. They had to have a private place, you know, somewhere where they could go out of the purview of everyone in the entire thing. You had to be able to lock the door. You had to have some time away. So, and employers had to give them that because we believed in families and values and the children, of course. And the right lost their ever-loving freaking minds. Limbaugh lost his mind. How dare they do this to corporate America? Remember, this is the party of family values, mind you. And look, if again, this is what I keep talking about the abortion issue. If you're truly against it and you want to be against it, how about policies that encourage people to have children and make it easier on families to raise them? This is one of those moments. Because you know what? You shouldn't need formula, as much formula. If you had the ability for mom to stay home and bond with the child and feed the child, you know, kind of the way nature intended, you know, the best possible nutrients and the best possible food for baby right from the start, and not have to go run off to work 2 or 3 crappy jobs to make ends meet, That's the best possible solution and one that the family values people should be all behind. But yet, oh my gosh, you see someone breastfeeding in a mall? Do you remember the hue and cry over that? And where did that come from? That's right, our good God-fearing Christian crazy people. So in this moment, you go, this is where policy matters. And this is where the people who keep telling us they're the family values folks should shut the blank up. And again, this is terrestrial radio, the word I really wanted to use. I could not. I don't want to get banned. But this is one of those moments where, you know, all of the grievance crowd, which the Republicans are beautiful at, they keep bringing up the problems. They keep over there pointing. They're like the pointer dog. They keep pointing, no solutions. I just gave you a good solution. And I gave it to you for free. So I'm challenging my pro-life Republican friends to go, you know what? Rick's got a great idea. We should be the party that we say we are and come up with policies that are going to encourage people to want to have children and policies that are going to help them raise those children and policies that are going to, move us in a direction that we're, not demonizing. And maybe we can fix some of these problems. Now, also, the Biden administration is going to allow more imports of baby formula because clearly the manufacturers haven't been able to keep up. Now you go, but Rick, you know, one of them had a problem with some bacteria. They had shut some lines down. Yeah, that's the problem with mass consolidation. That's the problem with having only a handful of companies. This is the reason we need to break up these big monopolies and we need to have more production by various companies so that if one goes down, the rest of them can pick up the slack, ramp up production, and meet our demand. This is why one, two, three companies bad. Again, my conservative friends, they used to understand and they used to believe that. Sadly, not so much anymore. And that's a problem. And look, I'm not saying there isn't a problem. We need formula. I'm not saying there's not a problem with inflation. We've got it. But just don't stand there and point it out. How about some solutions other than Joe Biden's fault? Crazy people, I'll tell you. Love to hear your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. Back after this.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in 2 segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Not rocket science, folks. Not rocket science at all. And look, I'm still looking for today's Teddy Roosevelt. Who's going to be our trust buster? Who's going to be the ones who start breaking up who's going to start breaking up these conglomerates and say, you know, it's not good for us. Might be good for corporate profits. Might be good for CEOs. Might be good for all that. Because, oh, by the way, you know, our friends in the formula folks who have the bacteria thing, stock buybacks. You go, here's an idea. We need more production. You know how you could have used that money better than buying your own stocks back? You could have increased production. Oh my goodness, you could have bought new material. You could have bought new facilities. You could have hired more workers. You could have done anything more. You could have thrown that money into a ditch and lit it on fire, which should have been more productive than what you actually did with it. But no. We're going to buy our own shares back. Screw those children. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. Alice, how are you today?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm loving the children. How about yourself?
Yeah, right. No, you know, not today. I've adopted the Republican frame of mind, you know. But seriously, what I wanted to say is they seem to be following, to a degree, the Republicans, that is, and the evangelicals, the Hitler playbook. And the thing is, you know, the very first people, Hitler did not kill the Jews first. First he went after the disabled children and the mentally ill children and the children that had Down syndrome and whatnot. So I'm going to make a prediction and say, by the time that they pass all these laws, and oh, here in about 20 years, when the climate change kicks in really good, and there's all kind of food shortages and medical shortages, that all of a sudden we're going to have the life unworthy of life from the Republicans.
No, I think and we already have that, Alice. I think we're already there. This is where their stance on health care does that. I think they know that we ration health care. I think they know that if you're not fortunate enough to have good quality health care in this country, you're going to die years sooner than you should. I think they're already there. And it's why they were so hell-bent on repealing the ACA and why they're so hell-bent on destroying Medicaid especially and ultimately Medicare. Because understand what Medicaid really is. Yeah, it helps the poor. But it helps poor seniors. It is our last line of defense for seniors. So this is how you really thin the herd. If they've got nowhere to go, they go to old age homes and we go back to warehousing seniors like we did in the past. This is the future where Republicans want to take us. But they're not brave enough yet to say that. They couch it in terms of responsibility and crap like that. But this is where I agree with you to a point, but I think we're already where you think we're going.
Well, yeah, to a degree. But what I'm saying is when it comes to the children, that once we get all of this, because, you know, we have to have the domestic supply of the infants,
yeah.
But I'm sure that we'll have little panels that, you know, oh, well, this one looks deformed or whatever or whatnot. And, you know, because you got to save all that food for the wealthy people.
But I thought we already had death panels. Didn't we have? Wasn't that what the ACA was? Wasn't that what Obama, the Obama death panels? Don't we already have those?
Under the Republicans, if you recall, that we suggested, they suggested that, you know, all the older people just sacrifice themselves for the betterment of the corporation. But I don't think that. Some people aren't paying attention, and the other people don't care.
Yeah.
But you have a good evening.
You too, Alice. I appreciate it. Jeff just sent me an email. Soylent Green. Yeah, thanks, Jeff. If you ever saw the movie, that's you're eating the people. Yeah. Wow. Thanks, Jeff. That was an image I did not need in that moment. But no, this is where I come back to, you know, what Alice was talking about. We're already there. They're just couching it in nicer terms. They know that people without adequate health care are going to die sooner. They know that we already ration care, which is why they don't really care about the children once they're born. Care about them in utero. Oh, care about that. Actually don't care about, you know, how they're born. They don't care about, I don't see any policies for prenatal care. Because, you know, if you're poor in this country, if you're a poor woman in this country, you've got some third world rates of possibly dying. Our maternal death rates are disgraceful. But we don't hear about that because those are just those people, just those poor people. And again, this abortion issue really is about the poor and the working class. And it may not be you. It may be your daughter or your sister. It may be someone you love. And this is where I think this is an everybody issue. I've said this 1,000 times. It's not my personal issue. It's not going to affect me individually. I am well past my childbearing years and ability, never having any. But I know and love bunches of people who this does affect. And that right to self-determination is the most important thing. Now, do I want them to have abortions? No. But I also don't want them having to go to a back alley. I also don't want them to have to be desperate. And that's where the Republicans want. That's where they want working people. They want them desperate and pliable. And not just in when having children, but in the workplace, as consumers, in society. That's what they want. And that's what they're working towards. That's what this is all part of. It's all part of their no rights at work and no rights in society agenda. And it's scary stuff. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. If you missed any of the program, grab the podcast. Anywhere you get that your podcast, from iTunes to iHeart, Stitcher, Podbean, anywhere in between, it's always there, always available. Make sure you like, share, subscribe. Good stuff. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I've been finding it interesting that I agree with, this is hard for me, it's really hard. I agree with something that Dan Crenshaw tweeted out. It's rare. It's rare, but you know, I guess it's when you, you know, when you're talking about Marjorie Three Names, it's really not hard to figure out. But there's, you know, the tweet off that goes on with when this stuff happens. And, you know, Marjorie Three Names has been, you know, kind of the Russian, you know, propagandist. She's been the one out there, you know, pushing the nonsense. And it's kind of frightening in a way that how far the Republicans have gone in defending. I mean, it's really, I never thought I would see it in my lifetime, just how far that the Republican Party has gone off the original path. But here to share some thoughts on just how crazy they have gotten and maybe talk a little bit about the tweet off. I've asked our good friend Sarah Burst to come talk with us. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story, rawstory.com. She does incredible reporting there. Sarah, thanks for taking time for us.
Hello.
So what do you make of?
I just got to show off the shirt.
Yeah, the shirt is amazing. And for those listening on radio, she has a shirt that says, "Even my cat knows Matt Gaetz should be in prison."
Which is hilarious because the cat was just like whining a second ago. I was like, oh God, please stop. But Marjorie Three Names, bless her heart. Traitor Green.
Yeah, you know, you look at this and you know, I've been watching her tweets over the last couple of days. You know, we're spending money on Ukraine where we should be spending it on baby formula. But where's your bill to actually, you know, fund baby formula? Yeah. Oh, we're not going to do that. We're just going to point fingers and complain. But, you know, Crenshaw came out and said, hey, you know, basically shut up.
Yeah, seriously. And the thing that's really bothering me about the whole baby formula issue is there's a plant that actually is on hold right now because a big recall happened. Like there was some kind of bacteria that was in one of the formulas and two babies died. So, I mean, we have the formula. It just might kill some kids. So if they're cool with that, then turn the plant back online without any regulations and give that bacteria stuff to the baby.
Well, ultimately, that's the world that they want us to be in, the deregulated state. But for me, the part of this that I took is this is the reason that mass consolidation of industry is a bad idea. Had we a number of companies that made baby formula, okay, one of them screwed something up, one of them's got a problem, all the rest of them could have ramped up production. This, to me, is the reason why we start breaking up these conglomerates and these monopolies and go back to a competitive system.
Exactly. And a part of that, too, is that this company supplies a certain area of the country. So there are parts of the country that are going to be more affected by this than the others. And there just are so few companies that actually make this stuff that I guess that's making things even worse. We could deploy the Defense Production Act and start ramping up that kind of thing. But does Congress want to have the government pay for that? Like, are they into that kind of thing? Because it seems like they didn't want to pay for a lot of stuff. So what do you do? Where's the bill, Marge?
This is where the party of family values. And in this moment, this is one of those moments where you go, okay, now's the time to put up or shut the blank up.
Yeah.
Where's the policy that's going to ensure that families can feed the children, the millions of children that you now want born? How are we going to feed them? How are we going to make sure that we have the production to feed them? And especially in this moment, where's your policy? Oh, that's right. We're just going to point at Joe Biden and go, he did this.
Yeah. But that's their thing. And I keep wondering if, if that's going to be their campaign for the next several months and into 2024, then you'd think we'd have this in a lock, because there's only so much pointing at Joe Biden is going to work. We've tried this. We've had this campaign with Donald Trump, and it ended up to, bite us in the behind, because there's only so much pointing at the other guy that you can do before people start asking about, okay, well, what's your solution? And if, you got to have the answers. That's the problem. And you've got Marge Green. And then I just saw our good friend Marsha Blackburn was making the same kind of comment. And so I was just like, Marsha, get that formula that's killing kids back online.
Yeah.
We could be feeding a lot of babies with that.
No, but I look at Marjorie Taylor Greene, and she's out there, screaming about this and screaming about the money we're giving to Ukraine. And I agree with Crenshaw saying, is that, he said, still going after that slot on Russia Today, huh? And it's true. Seems like they're auditioning for their next job, as Putin's spokesperson.
Yeah. And what's crazy to me is, Tucker Carlson ended up in doing his whole show in Hungary, and he's done this whole Putin worship stuff. And so I just, with stuff like those people, you have to wonder, how much are they going to make off of this? Like, do they have their regular Fox News salary or OAN salary? And then maybe they're getting some scrub from under the table from the international guys. Like, what's really going on here? And
yeah.
I mean, maybe if Marge wants to leave and go work for Russia and do a show there, I say farewell.
I'll start the GoFundMe account to get her to go. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. But, the question then becomes, and look, I was a kid growing up in the 70s and 80s, at the end of the Cold War. I still remember the mutually assured destruction mentality. I still remember, the fear of nuclear winter. I still remember the Russians were the enemy. And especially, the Republican Party, Reagan took on the Ruskies and, all that kind of stuff. And to have the party of Reagan now being the party of the Kremlin just seems really weird to me, which is why I thought it was interesting that you had written a piece about Steve Schmidt's comments about, fights almost breaking out during the McCain campaign over, people within his campaign who were, had some interesting ties to Russia.
Yeah, the conversation with Steve Schmidt online, I think everybody was really paying attention to this fight back and forth that he was having with Meghan McCain. What has sort of flown under the radar of that is that Steve Schmidt has basically just taken the the gloves off, where he's just like, okay, I'm telling everything now. And that goes into a really deep discussion about Rick Davis, who was one of McCain's top strategists, and his company that he had with Paul Manafort, and the enormous contracts that they had in Eastern Europe. And this idea that John McCain actually kind of knew that his campaign was infiltrated by these guys, and he just sort of compartmentalized it. And it was several people, the way that Schmidt tells it, there's several people on the campaign who kept trying to talk to him about this, like, dude, there are these Russian people. And it's, John McCain was never a pro-Russian guy, like, far from it. Very, very anti-Russia. And the way that Schmidt does it is it's like he really genuinely thought that he needed people like Rick Davis and Paul Manafort to get him elected. And they just basically ended up swindling him. By the end of December 2007, the campaign was completely bankrupt. And it was all because every dime that they spent through the campaign had to be funneled through Paul Manafort's company. And he said it goes back to Bob Dole in 96 and the Bushes, and like there has always been this this nebulous lobbying firm that is working its way into each presidential campaign and trying to, you know, finagle their influence. And they're tied very heavily tied to Russia and Oleg Deripaska and those guys. So, you know,
and some of it openly, because look, you know, we courted the capitalists because they're no longer communists. They're now capitalists, and we wanted to encourage that relationship. And I understand the argument that the right was making, because they're capitalists. They're like us. They're Wall Street types. No, they're not. They're not.
They were appointed. Like, the oligarchs are basically Putin's people that he installed in those CEO positions. You've got a guy who's running an oil and mineral company who has a degree in physical education. Like, come on, how did this dude get his job? Oh, he's BFFs with Putin, that's how. And now he's a billionaire, one of the richest people in the world.
I guess it's good to be in the right spot at the right time.
Yeah, but I mean, you gotta be careful, because the second you start hacking off Putin or, you know, funneling your money toward your next fancy yacht, you know, he's gonna drop some poison in your underpants.
No, and I don't think people know exactly how much damage someone like Paul Manafort has done to this country and to the globe, actually, how much influence that guy alone has had in some of the dirty dealing and backroom underhanded stuff that he's done and been a part of. And you could put Bannon in that. You could put that whole little goofy cabal, you know, even to a small extent, Rudy Giuliani and his ties to the Mujahideen Khalkin and all of those, all of those ties of international money that has enriched our political class of elites that now Republicans seem to be all in bed with.
And I would say that now we're getting into the relationships with the Saudis. And these are people who I think the White House came out this week and reinforced the idea that the 9/11 findings were that the majority of the hijackers were from Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's only 20 years too late.
Right? I mean, that was an actual piece of information from the 9/11 Commission, and nobody, like, nothing. Why would we go to war with Iraq whenever it was the Saudis? Because we need them. Yep. And there's nobody who understood that more than Donald Trump.
You listen to The Rick Smith Show here with Sarah Burris. Sarah's a reporter over at Raw Story. RawStory.com is the website. We'll get links out on social media where you can check out the incredible work that she does. And I see you've got a copy of the Mark Esper book, A Sacred Oath. And some of the fun stuff that's come out of that and a lot of the other books. I think my favorite story so far of any of the books, and there's so many, is that Trump actually thought that China had a weather gun, that they could create hurricanes, which now makes sense that why he thought you could maybe nuke a hurricane. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they had their hurricane gun. Seemed like a bad episode of Despicable Me. But, you know, it's just one of these things where now Gru is president. But Esper is going down this other path of a whole bunch of other insanity where, you know, I guess Trump wanted to call soldiers into D.C. and Seattle and Portland, wanted Trump soldiers all over the country.
Yeah, and one of my favorite times, I guess this happened frequently, that Trump wanted to call in troops into Washington, to Seattle, to Portland, to a bunch of different places. My favorite one, though, was apparently Trump called and woke everybody up one night whenever about a dozen protesters toppled a statue in Washington. And he's just, I don't know if the phone is actually red, but there's the phone that's a secure line from the White House. And apparently it chirps a certain way or something. And so Esper's like describing this whole thing. And he's like, every time I hear it, you know, it freaks me out. And I'm like, crap, you know, I got to wake up. And so he's just like half awake, fumbling around answering the phone, and Trump's just like, oh my God, they're tearing down the statues. They're coming for Lincoln and Washington next. Like, oh my God, the hell has arrived here in Washington.
Scrabble the fighters.
They're living together. Yeah, it's just, it was insane. And so he's like, yes, sir, I'm right on it. I'll get right on it. And so he calls Miley, and Miley's like, and of course he's asleep too. And he's like, apparently there's like some riot in Washington with people toppling statues, and they both are turning their TVs on and flipping through the channels, and they can't find any story about it. And they're like, what the hell? So finally Esper is like on the internet looking for what's actually happening. And it's like, you know, a dozen people after the statue topples, everybody disperses, police arrested a couple people, and it was over.
Yeah. But can you imagine if there were video? You know, I want the video footage before he makes the call of him sitting there, you know, anxiously reaching for the phone. I shouldn't. Yes, I should. No, I want that moment of indecision. Should I pick it up or shouldn't I? I want to know what those moments leading up to that call were like.
See, I don't think he has that moment. I think he just thinks immediately, I'm the president. You cater to me, and just grabs the phone. But that of all of the things, there are a bunch of fits, just tons of fits that Trump has, screaming at him about one thing or another. I guess he was really, when Esper made the press conference where he made some comment about how, you know, it would be bad to use the Insurrection Act during all of the Black Lives Matter protests, Trump was furious about it. And the interesting part of it is that he was more furious about the fact that Esper did the press conference at a time during a hearing in the U.S. Senate where Lindsey Graham was supposed to ask some random dude a question about Russia that Trump thought would, you know, completely free him of all Russia scandal. So that's what it was really about. And so that kind of stuff, and just that everything that they did was couched through the lens of politics. And I think we know that.
Sure.
We understood that about Trump. But to see it from somebody on who is very much on the government side of things, to then start to look at this like, oh, my God, you're basically talking about how every single action military takes through a lens of a campaign. And that's just not how things work.
And ratings. I mean, ultimately, he was the TV president. He wanted ratings.
Yeah.
So you can't step on the money shot. You got to get that.
I
completely makes sense. Lastly, I wanted to get your thoughts on today. The top story of today, the fact that the Select Committee is subpoenaing House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy, Representative Scott Perry, my congressman, Jim Jordan of Ohio, Andy Biggs of Arizona, and Mo Brooks of Alabama. Curious. I guess they wanted to get Ronny Jackson too at some point. That may happen. But thoughts on this? Any of them going to testify? Any of them going to comply?
Yeah, none of them are going to comply. But the thing is it's good for them either way. Like, Democrats have basically won this one way or the other. Republicans don't comply. They thumb their nose at it. And if they then take over in 2022 and decide that they're going to start calling people to Congress, all Democrats have to do is say, well, you know, Republicans set the precedent with not complying with the subpoenas, so bummer, you know. And then the other piece of this, too, is, and I think we've talked about this before, is if you if there is a congressional subpoena that you don't comply with, the Justice Department can use the fact that you didn't comply with that subpoena as part of the evidence that they explain to the grand jury. So whenever, you know, if you refer this to the DOJ for criminal prosecution, then the DOJ can be like, oh, it's interesting too, because we, you know, Congress subpoenaed Andy Biggs and he refused to comply with Congress. So, you know, here's the evidence we have on him and his resistance to participate. So it makes it very interesting. And I think there's no win for Republicans here.
Yeah, but you know, but I look at someone like my congressman, Scott Perry, who I find, you know, wholly unacceptable. But, you know, he leaned into it and he's going to run on this. This is a badge of honor for him in this district. this is an illegitimate body. You know, they leaked, this stuff, the charade to the media. It's all about politics to him, and they're running the country into the ground. You know, he's used it to stoke the base, making himself the martyr and the victim, yet he was one of the people who was instrumental in this attempt to overthrow our government. And it's not surprising to me, but, he's playing to his base.
I think all people have to do is ask, what do you have to hide? Like, what is it that you're worried about? This shouldn't be that big of a deal. If you didn't do anything wrong, then it shouldn't be that big of a deal, right?
See, for me, if I was running this
Trump
committee,
family.
If I was running the committee, I would have wanted all these people on the committee so that they're already in the room and I could have just turned to them and I said, well, what were you doing that day? They're already there.
See, I figure if you've got Ivanka Trump and Jared Kushner and Don Jr. all showing up to talk to this committee and members of Congress can't show up, what were they doing? What is it that they're hiding?
That is an excellent point. Excellent point, which is why you're the reporter asking the important questions. Sarah, I appreciate the time. As always, great stuff. Keep up the great work. Look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you. Have a good weekend.
You as well, our good friend Sarah Burris. Make sure you check out her work over at Raw Story, rawstory.com, the website. Quick break, right back after this. If you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss a second. Never miss an episode. Always there, always available. Share, subscribe, comment, like, all of that stuff. Quick break, right back after this. Think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Listening to the Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
That is an excellent question that Sarah asked there. If Ivanka and Dumb Jr. showed up to testify and were willing to speak, what are our Congress people hiding? What is it that they don't want to be known? Now, understand, someone like Jim Jordan, here's a thought. What was he doing on that day? Who was he talking to that day? Oh, that's right. He had a phone call with the president. We know that. What was said? Just kind of throwing that out there. What was his presence in the meetings, the White House meeting in the run-up to January 6th? What was his part in planning that? Same thing with Biggs. Biggs was in the meetings that decided on what was going to be done on January 6th. There are far right activists who are claiming that he was integral in the planning of this. And it's alleged that, he had efforts to persuade state legislators to overturn the electors. He actually worked on this stuff. Scott Perry, here's a guy, my congressman, who is instrumental, allegedly, I'm going to go with allegedly, even though he was allegedly instrumental in helping to install Jeffrey Clark, who is a central figure at the Justice Department, to overturn the election. In fact, we've got the texts that show that. You go down the list of these guys. McCarthy, the same thing. Phone call. What was he talking to with Trump on the day of January 6th? And remember, his comments after January 6th were, Trump was responsible and should resign. Why did you walk that back, Kevin? Just curious. And then, I go to Mo Brooks. Mo, you can explain away a little bit. Mo did do some stuff, but a little jilted after Trump pulled his endorsement. But Brooks alleges that Trump asked him to rescind the 2020 elections. asked him directly to remove Biden and install him, install Trump, and then to, quote, hold a new special election for the presidency, which would have happened in the House of Representatives, which they, again, Trump himself floated in Allentown, Pennsylvania at a big rally that, hey, you know we can win if it goes to the House because we've got the votes. Because then if it goes to the House, it doesn't go on the number of representatives. It goes on the number of states and their delegations, of which I think the Republicans had 26, 24. Even though the Democrats held the number of the House. This is one of those moments where, you know, they should be compelled to testify. If it were you or me or any working person, they would drag you in there. The sergeant of arms would come and get you and drag you in there. But there, well, there are high elite muckety mucks. I guess the law doesn't apply to them. And it should. It should, in this instance, should apply doubly to them because they are our representatives. That should supersede all of that. What were you doing in our name in those moments? Sorry, no Fifth Amendment right for you acting in an official capacity in our name. Just my thoughts. Love to hear yours, though. Should they be forced to testify? Is this one of those things that it should absolutely happen? Understand, they're not going to. Especially not before November. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, thericksmithshow.com, that's where you go to get the podcast. For folks listening on stations that pick up hour one, thanks for being here. Make sure you grab hour two in the podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. For everyone else, right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.